Do you ever see someone in a dead-end job, a low-paying job, and wonder how their life turned out that way? Don't tell me it's because they grew up poor, had an early life filled with inner home turmoil, or because of the color of their skin. All of those barriers can be overcome. Nobody says it's easy to overcome them, but there are many examples of Americans, black and white, who got it done. Nobody goes to school each day with dreams of being a gopher when they grow up. So what happens? Some drop out of school, some become pregnant, some are just lazy, and many just lack the drive and ambition to make a better life for themselves. All of them have excuses for failure. None of them lack talents, just the ability to discover and develop their talents. The fear of failure causes many people to settle for a mundane life. If you've followed my commentaries or listened to me on radio, you may have heard me speak of my own path from poverty to financial independence, from lackluster school performance to a never-ending thirst for knowledge. While others play games on the internet, I use it for hours a day to research things I don't understand. I could easily have been one of those destined to live life as a gopher in a low-paying job that sent me home miserable every night. I thank God for instilling in me the drive and determination to avoid that kind of misery. New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez hurled accusations against Amazon, accusing them of paying starvation wages to their employees. It was a typical Democrat move designed to make it appear that Democrats are more deserving of your vote than Republicans. For more than 50 years, the Democrats have tried to convince poor people that it is only through government and their control of that government that the poor can survive. After more than five decades, the poor are still poor. Obviously, Democratic promises ring hollow. Amazon countered Ms. Cortez, pointing out that their lowest-paid employees receive $15 an hour, plus attractive benefits like health insurance. This latest outrage statement from Ocasio-Cortez prompted my commentary today. In it, I'll share my experiences moving from being very poor to rising above it. No thanks to government, which took more and more of what I earned along the way. Anytime I mention how someone can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, I've been told by liberals that my story is somehow unique. I'm some sort of anomaly. That's far from the truth, and I'll try to explain why today. First of all, I know quite a few people who began very poor and rose above it. I grew up among poor people, but I was never content to remain poor. Not everyone can become a millionaire, but anyone can better their life. It doesn't just take hard work and dedication. My father worked hard all of his life and was dedicated to taking care of his family's needs. Still, he was born poor and he died poor, but not as poor as when he was born. He made strides along the way, but several things held him back. First of all, he married early and began bringing children into the world, six in total. With those children came responsibilities, and so his options were limited. Moving to where there were better opportunities was not an option for my father. He was born just before the Great Depression and had to leave school after the third grade to help bring in money for the family. That left him with yet another disadvantage. Being white offered him no special privilege. Still, my father taught himself to read and write and was loaded with common sense. That wasn't enough, however, to allow him to compete with higher-educated people and left him with insecurities, which added yet another layer of disadvantage. I was proud of what my father did accomplish, given all the roadblocks he encountered, and watching him struggle gave me valuable insight into why so many people remain poor. One important factor contributing to different levels of wealth is people are paid different wages. We hear constantly about the income gap in America, but there's always been that gap, and there always will be, not just in America, but across the world since time began. There are several reasons why some people are paid millions, while some merely earn minimum wage. Wages are a function of the marketplace of skills required for a particular job. In a free market, the marketplace of a skill is determined by market demand for that skill and market supply. Michael Jordan was paid tens of millions of dollars a year to play basketball. His skill on the court was extraordinary, and so the demand for that level of skill was great. Maybe you and I could play basketball too, but we'd be paid much less, if any at all, because we lack Jordan's skills. The Trump economy is on fire, and today there are more jobs open than people to fill those jobs, and so wages are increasing across the board, even for those with little or no skills. Individuals with different levels of education often earn different wages. With a higher level of education, a person often has more advanced skills than few workers are able to offer, justifying higher pay. Although America offers free education through the 12th grade, levels of education received by each individual still differ, not because of financial ability, but innate qualities like intelligence, drive, and personal ability. Moreover, receiving the same level of education does not mean receiving education of the same quality. This accounts for the difference in abilities, and hence wages, for individuals who all received 12 years of education. Therefore, it seems no matter how good the social welfare policy of a country is at preventing denial of education due to finances, differences in education, in terms of levels and quality, still play a prominent role in economic inequality. Growth in technology affects joblessness at all skill levels. For unskilled workers, computers and machinery perform a lot of the tasks that workers used to do. In many jobs today, such as packaging and manufacturing, machinery works even more effectively and efficiently. Hence, jobs involving repetitive tasks have largely been eliminated. Skilled workers are not immune to the nightmare of losing jobs either. The rapid development of artificial intelligence may ultimately allow computers and robots to perform knowledge-based jobs. Although both skilled and unskilled workers are adversely affected by the technological advance, it seems unskilled workers are subject to the worst of outcomes. This is because the labor market may still need skilled workers to use the computers and operate the machines of the future. The rightward shift in the demand for skilled labor creates an increase in the relative wages of the skilled compared to the unskilled. Hence, the income gap among workers has also widened. There is also a gender income gap in the labor market. For example, the median full-time salary for women is about 85% of that of men. However, women who work part-time make more on average than men who work part-time. Additionally, among people who never marry or have children, women make more than men. It's generally believed that innate abilities play a part in determining the wealth of an individual. Hence, individuals possessing different sets of abilities may have different levels of wealth, leading to economic inequality. For example, more determined, driven individuals may keep improving themselves and striving for better achievements, which justifies higher pay. When it comes to working harder or having fun, equally capable individuals may have totally different priorities, resulting in a difference in incomes. Their saving patterns may also differ, leading to different levels of accumulated wealth. There is no doubt that children born into a rich family have an economic advantage because of wealth inherited and possibly education, which may increase their chances of earning a higher income than their peers. It should be noted, however, some psychologists disagree with the proposition that wealth accumulation is a main cause of economic inequality. They argue that factors like innate ability instead of a better starting point are the most important determining factors in the wealth accumulated by a person. It is here that I come down on the side of those sociologists. My own experiences in life have shown me that while it can be helpful to be born into a family of wealth, those people also have their own problems. I can remember two examples. One was a fellow classmate of mine whose family was wealthy by our small town standards. But below the surface in their home simmered problems that created great anxiety. His mother had a drug habit that caused dissension within the walls of their home. There were constant arguments that left him somewhat paranoid. True to form, he never achieved much success. The other example was a fellow classmate and good friend whose parents were not wealthy, but whose grandfather lived in the home and gave him lavish gifts, a sporty new convertible, and money to go away to broadcasting school after high school. That better starting point never translated into a better station in life. On the contrary, this young man wound up in a dead-end job that paid just enough to get by. My starting point was far different and much more challenging. The tensions in our home, stoked by excessive alcohol consumption, boiled over into actual physical confrontation between our mother, our father, and our father's brother, who lived with us for as long as I can remember. Weekends could be hell on earth for frightened children. This continued from the time I was about 8 until I left for the Navy at 18. By the grace of God, our parents stopped drinking, joined their church, and lived normal, sober lives for the last 30 or so years of their life. Still, the trauma of those violent times was a factor in creating insecurity and the lack of self-esteem in their children. That was burden number one that I faced. Number two was a physical disadvantage from birth in the form of a damaged hip that would later result in hip replacement. It hit me around the time I was 9. It was a frightening time. I was hospitalized for several weeks and then released on crutches that propelled me for about 6 more months. Again, by the grace of God, I was able to toss aside the crutches and live a fairly normal life as a teenager. I wore the Elm City High uniform in baseball, basketball, and football, and I became a starter on each team. Still, I carried the secret of that hip problem and the uncertainty of how it would one day end. Those kind of things work on us emotionally and can derail those who can't develop the fortitude to keep moving forward. The third disadvantage I faced was by my own creation. My life revolved around sports to the exclusion of hard work and preparation in education. I left high school with little or no work skills and totally unprepared for the challenges we all face in life. Frustrated, unsure what to do, I joined the Navy in October 1960, 3 months after my 18th birthday. That was the move that turned my life around. I suddenly found myself in the midst of people far smarter and more skilled than I was. I had grown up in a small town, lived in the country with tenant farmers, worked and played with kids who were black and white, and never realized what a dead-end life I was living. I had attended a segregated school, not because I was a racist, but because I was a young boy, and that's the way the world was at that time. Thankfully, our parents, with all of their faults, never taught us to be racists or to focus hate on people who were rich. Here I was in boot camp in San Diego, far from home and surrounded by whites, blacks, and Filipinos. We were taught to be a team. At my first duty station in Texas, I had three roommates who were all in the clerical field. They were from Seattle, Chicago, and San Francisco, and far more sophisticated than I was. Rather than resent them, I sopped up their knowledge like gravy on fresh bread. They guided me into journalism with the base paper based on my knowledge of sports. I taught myself to type and turned the base education department upside down to make up for all the gaps in my education. I became a voracious reader, which continues today. One evening, as a member of the medical department's basketball team, I took a horrendous fall and was taken to sick bay. A series of x-rays exposed the hip problem, and I was sent to the Corpus Christi Naval Hospital, where I was honorably discharged. At that point, I could have given up. But by now, I had developed drive. Some would say desperation, to cast aside poverty and make a success of life. Still, I did not know what direction my life should take when fate intervened. I was dating a girl from Rocky Mount and working at the town newspaper. She introduced me to her brother, who was in radio, and he regaled me with tales of the rich and famous. He was neither of those, and I was a long way off. Having no money, I couldn't afford to go and take an engineering course in Atlanta that would get me a first-class engineering license, which was needed in every radio station and could result in my first radio job. That's when the only government program that ever helped me kicked in. The Department of Vocational Education, citing my deteriorating hip problem, paid my tuition of $600 at Elkins Institute of Electronics in Atlanta and room and board at a rooming house. Through increased taxes, I have repaid the state of North Carolina many, many times over. 6 weeks later, upon graduation, I got a job offer as an engineer and disc jockey at a small Alabama radio station. It paid $85 a week. My parents loaned me $35 for a one-way bus ticket, and I arrived at the station with $2.47 in my pocket. That's how my broadcast career started. I had no safety net. It was up to me to sink or swim. This brings me to the point of my commentary today, the fixation that some have on income inequality, the idea that poor people are doomed to remain poor. It isn't so. Now, I'll readily admit that life isn't fair, that bad things happen to good people, and that climbing out of poverty is a steep climb. That's why most people give up and resign themselves to a mundane life living paycheck to paycheck. To make it out requires not only hard work and determination, but self-education and sacrifice. You can't spend money today and have money tomorrow. It is imperative to plan ahead, follow a budget, and build a cash reserve for the inevitable rainy day. For example, if you have an insurance deductible, you should build a reserve to meet that deductible and never touch it. Of course it's hard to do living day to day, but giving up cigarettes or beer, tattoos, and metal in the eyebrows, and put that money aside for emergencies. A dollar a week is $52 a year. If necessary, take a second job until you can afford to stop. In our early married life, I worked three jobs and taught broadcasting courses four nights a week for almost 3 years, always with an eye to the future. Anne and I just smile when someone tells us how lucky we are to be able to take cruises or fly to foreign lands. That is possible today because of the sacrifices we made yesterday. I changed radio station jobs several times as a disc jockey, not for more money necessarily, but to learn better skills. With those skills, the money would come later. It's also important to keep an eye on technology and to adapt to it. The world is changing quickly, and we have to keep up. There came a time when the Federal Communications Commission changed its rules to allow radio stations in smaller towns to relocate to an area that provided the signal not only over the small town, but a far larger one as well. Because I was ambitious and driven to succeed, I was among the first to recognize this trend and ultimately did more of these move-ins than anyone else in the business. I was still operating radio stations and performing on air, but I did not suffer from myopic vision. We have to be ready and prepared to take advantage of opportunities. That also requires us to take calculated risks, something that, again, separates those who succeed and those who live with the more safe status quo. Ultimately, this poor small-town boy from Elm City became a man who controlled 57 radio stations, stretching over 13 states, and achieved the financial security he had not just dreamed of, but secured. I decided to bear my life, not to brag or pat myself on the back, but to show what can be done if we truly want to get it done. Sitting around feeling sorry for ourselves and bemoaning income inequality doesn't make life better. Waiting for government to make our lives better is a fool's errand. I've been the employee and I've been the employer, and so I can see both sides. I've had employees working under the same job titles, but who aren't paid equally because one possesses more skill than the other, shows more drive and determination, and is willing to make sacrifices today for success tomorrow. I see that person as a future manager in the company and worth more in salary. I can like the other person and be glad to have them in the company, but their salary depends upon their skills and efforts. That's a point lost on liberal America. They see income inequality as some sort of punishment. Notice that these liberal Democrats, suffering from diarrhea of the mouth, never start up companies themselves or face payrolls. They know how to play on heartstrings and tell others how much to pay their employees. But if it wasn't for their government salaries, they would starve to death. It is true that those who can do and those who can't preach. Lastly, focus on the positive. Surround yourself with positive people. Set boundaries for yourself and learn to be assertive when necessary. Work to become self-confident. You'll know when you're a success because others will tell you how lucky you are. The willingness to think is something that no one else can give you. Most successful people today who were born in poverty and made it out had no other option. No safety net, no fallback living in their parents' home, and nobody to lend them support. It is possible, then, to escape poverty, but it does require some intelligence. You either develop that intelligence in school or take the far harder job of self-education. Poverty is often a transitory time, a thing experienced early in life. Those college graduates who live in poverty after graduation do so because they didn't study hard or hardly studied the idiotic major they chose while attending keg parties. The middle class often slides down the ladder of poverty, particularly after leaving home, after college, or in the middle of college. This comes as a shock for many as they are used to certain standards of living. Some slide down the ladder and never escape. Because once you have kids, get married, and your job prospects are set low early in life, it is harder and harder to escape from poverty, at least on your own. But such folks do have intelligence, and native intelligence is the strongest weapon you have in your arsenal to escape a life of marginal living and a paycheck-to-paycheck life. But for the truly poor, people who are mired in poverty for generations and who are not very bright folks, it's not so easy. Stupidity in terms of lack of intelligence and lack of education is what keeps a lot of people down and allows them to be snookered with horrifically bad bargains and thus perpetuate the cycle of poverty their entire lives. There are a few poor folks who manage to get by. They were fortunate in that friends and neighbors in their local church formed a committee to look after them and make sure they were not constantly taken advantage of. Churches used to do that sort of thing before it became all about tithing more and paying off the mortgage of the mega church building. Some churches still do. However, the vast majority of the poor will remain poor. Jesus said, "The poor will always be with us," which has two meanings for me. First, no matter how wealthy a society is, there will always be someone at the bottom of that society. The poor in America are wealthy by African standards, or indeed many parts of the world where starvation is a real possibility. Only in America can you be poor and own a car. But since comparatively they are poor to the rest of the Americans, we consider them poor. So no matter how wealthy a country is, there will always be someone poor in that country, not in absolute terms, but by comparison. Second, there will always be the poor in spirit. Poverty is something of a mental attitude as well as a bank balance. When you start to think poor, you tend to assume you are only worthy of the worst deals and the poorest bargains. You expect little and you get little. This is not meant to say that you can think your way to wealth, only that when you have a poor mindset, then it becomes easier to accept bad financial deals, as you think that's all you deserve. If you embrace ghetto culture and Ebonics as defining who you are and your cultural heritage, you are poor in spirit and far less likely to escape the ghetto. If you embrace poverty as being noble and better than wealth, then not surprisingly, wealth will elude you all of your life. If you eschew education and knowledge, you will remain poor. If you think that fake news is real news, you are likely to remain at the bottom in life forever. But for many others, poverty isn't a natural condition. Many well-educated, middle-class people fall down the economic ladder for no apparent reason at all. Often, they have to do with low self-esteem and their upbringing. Drugs are often involved as well. The smartest of the poor, if they can figure a legitimate way out, often find illegitimate ways out. Career criminals and organized gang members are often very smart people who just apply their intelligence in the wrong direction. So say you are a poor person, either in wealth or in spirit or both, and you want to change your life and work, your way up the economic ladder. How do you escape the mire you're bogged down in? I'll offer something based on my own rise from poverty to where I am today. I refused to listen to the naysayers who spoke about how unfair it was to live in America and how awful poor people have it. That is externalizing, and it is not helpful to you personally at all. In fact, it's very harmful. Even assuming it's true that the evil one percenters are out to get you, obsessing about this isn't going to better your life one bit. If you buy into this narrative, it's an easy way to simply give up and assume that nothing in your life will ever change. So why bother trying? And that, in a nutshell, is why people externalize. To sum it up, the best way to escape poverty is to take action in your life rather than wait for a government program that will never materialize, and if it does, will make you weaker. Of course, none of this is easy. No one ever promised it would be easy. Americans of all races, colors, and creeds have been privileged to be given a life in a country with the freedom to become whatever you will yourself to be, or the freedom to fail. Each of us has to make that choice on our own. I thank you for listening today. I hope you will tune in each week on my commentaries. I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me by email at comments@tomjoyner.net. Comments@tomjoyner.net. I'll be back next week, same time, same station, God willing.